Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. This is episode number 48. I am Michael Citro, the managing editor of themainland.com, SB Nation's Orlando City website, which we also cover the Orlando Pride and Orlando City B in the NWSL and USL, respectively. I am joined tonight by staff writer Andrew Harrison, senior columnist. Andrew, how are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to this weekend, and the more soccer action, the better.
Yeah, we're going to record this podcast while we're in a yet another Orlando City B weather delay. I don't know what we've had more of, Andrew, quite honestly, OCB red cards or OCB lightning delays.
You know what? I feel like that would be a question to throw out to Twitter just to look at those statisticians, because I'm going to go with red cards right now.
It's got to be pretty close. It's probably so close as to make no difference at all. Anyway, we are coming off a weekend of soccer in which Orlando City went to New England to play on the turf at Gillette Stadium without Kaká for yet another game. I think that's five that he's missed this year. Mm-hmm. The Lions didn't play that great. But they came home with a result, 1 point, with the courtesy of a 2-2 draw, shocking result against New England, another 2-2 draw. That's three times out of four meetings that the teams have drawn 2-2. And rescuing a point at the death with a Carlos Rivas goal, a Carlos Rivas MLS goal that actually went in the net instead of the upper deck of the stadium. Carlos finishing what was really a tremendous play all around. And I want to get right into this because actually I was out of town over the weekend and didn't get to see the entire game. My daughter graduated from college and we were all out of town for that. And I was keeping up with it on Twitter and stuff and watching the highlight videos as they were posted. But just a tremendous team play. Ramos with a good long outlet pass to Batista, who one-timed it into the corner for Kyle Larin. Larin slid one across, and Carlos Rivas, who, by the way, was on his own half of the midfield stripe when Batista got the ball, finishes the play. Just made an amazing run into the box and beat the defender to the spot, stabbed it into the net, and got the tie. What'd you think of that goal?
I thought it was a really great all-around team goal, but let's be honest, nobody expected Rivas to actually score. But I guess in a world where Leicester City can win the Premier League, Carlos Rivas can eventually hit the back of the net with all of his opportunities. I just thought it was a great play, and I think it really kind of shows you why Batista was brought in, and I think it was just really harsh to say for him and all of the games that we've seen him play so far is really is a difference maker. And the fact that he's only getting 9-10 minutes here or there is really kind of a sorry state of affairs right now, because he really is such a great playmaker for this team.
Yeah, Adrian Heath has his designs on what he wants to get done, and Batista was brought in as a reserve, and he's been playing as a reserve, and it's if he keeps playing this well, the fitter he gets, he's going to have to see more minutes, don't you think?
Oh, I think without a doubt. I mean, he hadn't been playing regular games, I think, before we signed him. But he's starting to get to the point where I think he's almost got to be one of those first names on the team sheet. Like, he's just coming in and changing games. We saw it in the I've forgotten the game where they came on, like, right in the death. In the Philadelphia game, you know, both him and Rivas kind of turned it around and almost scored that winner, or at least Rivas did, off of Vinter's cross. I think that you've got to start really highlighting the fact that these guys need to be starting, just because I did get to watch the whole game, and I actually would have preferred that we lost so that something would have changed about this team.
Mm. Well, Logan Oliver actually wrote a story about that today, about Carlos Rivas. Maybe he should be starting, and makes a good case. By the way, I think you had that backwards. I think it was Rivas with the cross for Vinter,
yeah,
who one-timed it, and Andre Blake made a save of the week type save on it, which kept Orlando City from rescuing a point in a game where it should have gotten a point, because Pro decided to pro yet again and said the offside is not important to us. We give zero dams about the offside. The goal stands. And by the way, MLSsoccer.com included that Barnetta goal in their goals of the month for April. So offside goal is among the goals of the month.
It's amazing how they love to kind of highlight the quality of the league, and yet then they do that kind of stuff. It makes you just so frustrated.
Yeah, you look at this play. I mean, you may as well include saves when the play was had the flag up for offside, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you may as well. I mean, here's the other thing too. You know, I want to personally give a shout out to New England's communications department for somehow finding a way to deny Kyle Larin an assist on the Rivas goal when it was a pretty straightforward cross into the box that Rivas got there first and stuck in the back of the net. So good job, guys. Nice job. Nice effort.
It's just everybody all around us now. And we don't like to hop on that people are out to get us, but when that kind of thing happens, you wonder who was watching the game, you know?
Yeah, I think I used to work in minor league hockey, and you would go to places and your team would get stiffed on assists all the time. And the guys come off the ice and they go like, I didn't get an assist on that. And, you know, that's the first thing they start doing is complaining, because a lot of guys have, incentives mm-hmm. in their contracts. And, you know, yet the home team would get two assists on every goal, even if the goal was straight off a turnover, right? Like, the guy intercepts a pass and scores in one motion and yet gets two assists on the play. So, you know, it happens, some home cooking it, and some of it's just ineptitude. You just have to say, you know, they're just inept. They just didn't know what they were doing. But, you know, there were two assists. I think they gave a hockey assist on the I'm not sure if it was the Agudelo goal or the other one. But, so I noticed that in the box score. But, you know, Larin actually has a case for two assists, and he would be leading the team in assists. It would be interesting for him to for Kyle Larin to be on 4 goals, 3 assists this early in the season would be a pretty incredible feat. But he should at least have that second assist.
Yeah.
For the second goal. But you know, I think getting back to Carlos Rivas for a minute, let's talk about him, because I'm a Carlos Rivas fan. I'm going to come right out and just tell the world, I think this kid's got some potential. I think this kid can play. I think he needs minutes to really integrate into what his team is trying to do. I know that when he's on the pitch, he doesn't always look like he's part of the team. He sometimes looks like a freelancer out there. But I think the longer he's out there, the more it's going to benefit both him and the Lions. And, you know, we've seen it before. When he's on his game out there on the left side, he puts in some service to Kyle Larin that you just can't even believe when you see it. The ball just bends around the defenders perfectly, and Larin has really nothing to do but touch it home a lot of those times. So I would like to see more of Carlos Rivas, especially you know, in these situations where we've got guys out and not really playing our preferred lineup. And, you know, I think he's a guy who can make a difference and make things happen. Now, if you want to say he should be a super sub, you know, I can't really argue too much with that. But I don't think you wait till the 80th minute to put in your super subs. I think you're talking more like 60 minutes.
Yeah, well, I think he's got that pace that, you know, we talked about the Chicago game, you know, the David Akams, the Kennedy Abogunigas, you know. We have that pace. Why are we not using it? Especially when that game was really not great for our left side. Mm-hmm. Breck Shea just kept getting burned all over the park. Why wouldn't we start kind of throwing the pressure back on their side and getting that separation? And also, you got to realize, you know, Larin had, I'm going to say, six goals by this time last season, I think. And he had Rivas supplying him. He's getting less service nowadays because Rivas isn't there. I think that's an important thing to note as to why he could be important for that left side if we continue these struggles.
Yeah, well, I mean, Larin did miss a couple of games with injury, and also last year he didn't really start until the Portland game. So, but, you know, in this equal number of games, yeah, he did start off scoring almost a goal a game there for a bit last year. But and this year he did start out scoring a goal a game for 3 straight games. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a great partnership with Carlos Rivas, and I think that you have to use that. And I would really much prefer to see Molino playing centrally, and maybe you go back to the 4-2-3-1, and you have Molino playing in the middle between Rivas and Vinter. I think that's pretty formidable for MLS. And you know, I know you're paying Nocerino. You want to play him. And, you know, he almost had a heroic moment on Saturday with a near miss at the post, but you know, and people are like, you know, shaking their heads, but you know, even the best goal scorers in MLS miss goals from point blank range like that and miss the net from point blank range. So, you know, you shake your head, you go, it's another tough break for him. I still think that Nocerino's got some quality and that he will start to show it here in the near future. People are like, well, bench him till he gets fit or whatever. But, you know, that's not really how it works. You really have to play to get into that groove, and you have to really play your way into form. You can't really, you know, get into form sitting on the bench. So, and he's not the kind of player, let's face it, that's going to go over and play in Melbourne or sit through a lightning delay in Melbourne and then, you know, play for OCB. So, you know, be a little bit more patient with Nocerino. We are still just 8 games into the season, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the problem with Nocerino potentially is that he – maybe this isn't his system. You know, I'm not too sure he's really suited out to be that defensive midfielder. He likes the freedom and the creativity for being somebody that doesn't necessarily have such an assigned role. I would actually start to like to see him more in that number 10 role, I think, so that he does have the ability and the flexibility to kind of move around the park a little bit, because I think he's also starting to disrupt the partnership between Hagida and Seren, who have looked kind of poor the last couple of games, and I think he's starting to throw them off because they don't know where he's going to be, and that's really kind of causing a disconnect for them. But a time will always tell. You can't get minutes playing and training. That's not the same thing. That isn't competitive gameplay. Only way to get this guy up to speed is to do this. But, you know, at what point, and we go back to the subs again, you have to think that just giving him 60, 70 minutes would be better than leaving it to the 81st minute before you start subbing him out if he's not having that great of a game.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, we have talked, I think, before on this podcast and amongst ourselves about, you know, maybe one of Adrian Heath's faults is his substitutions. He'll get it exactly right one week, and then the next week it will have absolutely no effect, or he won't do anything until it's like, you know, the death of the game or whatever. But there's so much going through a coach's mind that, you know, it's so hard to second. I mean, actually, it's not hard. It's very easy to second guess him, but it's really hard to get in their mind and to do it. I mean, unless you're on the sideline, unless you're in his mind and you know what he's thinking, there's not really a lot that you can say about it other than it was his decision. Now, I've heard some things this year about Adrian Heath that I haven't heard in the past, which is, you know, there's some impatience on the fans' parts. And, you know, I think that part of that is that this club is getting a bigger and bigger following, so there are a lot more fans now that don't have that connection with Adrian Heath from the USL days. That's part of it, and I think another part of it is impatience. And, you know, I think Adrian Heath didn't forget how to manage, you know, from his USL days. I don't think necessarily that they always had the best talent in USL, although they certainly had a talented team. I think that he can manage. I think he knows how to coach, and I think that hasn't gone away. And you know, they say some guys can coach to a certain level and then they're in over their heads. And I don't think that Adrian Heath has reached his ceiling yet, but he is still just 42 games into his MLS career. So, I mean, again, you know, he's still sort of learning the ropes, sort of learning what he can do against certain players and what he can do against certain systems and learning the managers of this league too. So, you know, I just think that, It's way too early. I think that he gets the full year. I don't think that that ownership will pull the plug on him unless this team goes into just a really abysmal spiral.
Yeah, I don't think I think they give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you have to give him credit for getting this team into Major League Soccer. If we hadn't had that success in USL, we wouldn't be here. So he's earned his time. He's got the credentials. He's got the caliber that you would expect from a player for a manager that you really want to see come into this league. But what I think is just incredibly interesting is that we can blow out a Portland or an LA and then just look so poor against other Eastern Conference opposition that once again really lags so far behind the Western Conference in terms of overall talent and breaking up games and goal scoring. It's just amazing that he's, I mean, if we could move Orlando to the Western Conference, we'd probably be winning this thing outright by a really long margin. He gets the time, but I think there is going to be that part where you don't have the fan base that's willing to wait any longer that we did in USL because, you know, you've seen it right now. The crowds aren't going to USL. They're coming to the big games. They're filling Camping World Stadium. And they want to see the win. Sorry, I have remembered to say it right, though, at least. They can pay us later. It's just you want to, you need to, he has to change. And I don't want to see him adapt to the just because of the fans, but he has to start adapting to this league and realizing that substitutions are coming too late.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I will say that he knows that if he doesn't make the playoffs, he's probably out of a job.
Yep.
He has said this before. So he knows that, you know, he's got, he's taking, and whether that's true or not, only he and the ownership knows, but, you know, he's taking it and putting the pressure on his own shoulders to make the playoffs this year. And so, you know, we'll see how successful he is with that. And, you know, I am certainly not going to judge Adrian Heath 8 games in when, you know, you've had Kyle Larin out, you've had Kaká miss several games, you've had suspension. You've got two new guys that are supposed to be key players that haven't really integrated quite yet. So this team now is not what the team is going to look like in August. So I'm willing to give this some time. If the as long as you know they can keep grinding out some results and staying in the race, that's very important. Because you know a year ago they were losing those games at the end. So you know, this year it seems like Orlando City is good at scoring early and good at scoring late, but not so good at scoring in the middle. So all they got to do is get that middle of the game part down, and they'll have it made. As somebody who did watch the entire game, Andrew, what were your overall thoughts on the New England Orlando City match?
It was just the same old, same old. It was kind of a continuation of the last few games where we seemed to go out with a lot of purpose, and then there was like a 60-minute patch of the game right in the middle where we couldn't have really bought an attack. We just didn't have the pace. We didn't have the ability to break them down. We were, you know, suffering the same way that we did in the Red Bulls game where they just had a lot of possession, and we were constantly playing defense. We have to start getting back on that front foot, but we have to make that front foot last longer than 5 minutes. And right now, we don't seem to be able to convert that. And I'm not too sure if it, I'm beginning to think it's the formation that we're playing that is causing such a disconnect between the front line and the defense, because the midfield just seems to be where we consistently are struggling. And that was pretty, once again, self-evident against a strong New England midfield that really is the engine room for this team. We just will cause problems all over the park. And we don't seem to have the answers. I would say that when Carrasco came on, I did feel like the game changed a little bit in our favor, by moving to kind of almost a lone person back up front again and kind of pegging some people back. But I just I don't see how we get a win continuing to play in this formation based on the New England game.
I'm with you a little bit. I'd like to see us just go back to letting Darwin Serén and Chris Nikita cover all the ground in the central midfield. Let them be the engines, let them be the workhorses, and then let them get the ball forward and have numbers in attack, you know, have three attacking midfielders and Kyle Larin up top working above them. I think that's how this team sort of was built. So I think that's how this team sort of works best. You know, bringing on Nocerino, I kind of like your idea of moving him up because the fact is that he's not really a prototypical defensive midfielder. He's more like a deep-lying offensive playmaker, like a very poor man's Pirlo, right? You know, he's more comfortable getting some space, pulling some strings, picking out a pass. And I would like to – anyway, I'm a big proponent of moving Kaká back to the left, where I think he's much, much more comfortable. So I don't think he's a true central attacking midfielder. I think he really prefers to work the edge of the box and in rather than the middle. And I don't know that it's a vision thing. I just think it's a comfort thing. So I think Nocerino between Molino and Kaká would also be very formidable.
Yeah, I think the reason I would really want to see him move forward is he has the ability to potentially make that mistake right now, and then he would still have Higuita and Seren be able to kind of cover for him. Whereas right now, because he's supposed to be playing with them, they're not working as a unit. So he was, don't get me wrong, I thought he ran all over the field, but mm-hmm. he didn't do anything. And that was what was missing. So I would love to see him move over. I'm not too sure I like your idea of having Kaká on the left. I just feel like, once again, we go back to the supporters of this club. And if you moved him out there, I think people would be like, well, he's completely lost the plot. Why would you play a number 10 out on the left? And, you know, I would love to see it because I think that is where he is strongest. And I think mm-hmm. the ability for him to cross to Larin to a Molino, which we didn't really get to see last year, would make all the difference, especially now that Molino has found his scoring boots.
I would just point to that the game where he pushed out to the left and Baptista played underneath Kyle Larin and you know with Molino, and they just looked like a whole different team. Mm-hmm. And I've never they just were just wave after wave of attacking force. I really enjoyed that, and I think you know, sure, the fans might wonder what the heck Heath was doing, but you know, 3 points here and the 3 points there, and that talk will go away pretty fast.
Yeah, but I think one thing that's been, I feel, pretty self-evident over the last couple of games too, is we have to get better at set pieces. Whether or not Nocerino's taking them, Kaká's taking them, we have to beat that first man. We have to get some elevation. No, virtually none of Nocerino's corners the other day made it to where you would consider somebody scoring from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our dead ball situation just across the park has to get so much better. And I want to see us stop playing the short free kick. Let's get
like
some pressure. We've got some pace. It makes no sense when we have a Higuita, you know, just on the edge of the center circle in our own mid-half, play a 5-yard short ball. Let's mm-hmm. just go ahead and launch it forward. We've got some great, if the beast is playing, we've got some great people who can nudge a guy off the ball. We've got some great pace that'll cut open the flanks. I would love to see us move away from the short free kicks.
Yeah, I agree with you. So do you have a man of the match for New England, Orlando City?
It was going to be a tough one, but I think I have to go with Bendik. He didn't make a lot of saves, but I think he really kept us in it. There was just a part of me that, you know, once again, we, without a goalkeeper, and yeah, we've kind of harped on him about a little bit, but we're seeing some commanding performances from him. And realistically, I just didn't think any of the outfield players deserved man of the match.
Yeah, I'm going to abstain from picking since I didn't get to see the entire match. Certainly I was impressed with what I saw, the highlights from Rivas and Baptista. I thought they both looked very good in the highlight package that I saw. Bendik looked good.
Yeah. The only reason I didn't go with Rivas or Baptista is I just 9 minutes makes it,
makes
it feel hard to give one. Because otherwise, I was tempted to lean towards Carrasco too, because I felt like he did kind of shore us up a little bit and turned us into a different team. But once again, I just felt like Bendik had a good, solid performance once again.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes people do more in 9 minutes than other people do in 81, so you know, or 90 for that
matter.
There's
a bumper sticker.
Pride, Orlando Pride. They were 1-1. They go up to Chicago. Julie Johnston does not start for the Red Stars, and you're starting to think, hey, going to score a couple goals, Alex Morgan. But no. In fact, every time Morgan got near the ball, she was double and triple teamed, and they really did a good job of shutting her down. Tom Sormani changed up his lineup a little bit. He took Jasmine Spencer out of the starting lineup, got Leanne Sanderson in, and It didn't go that well, actually, for the Pride, and they had some scoring opportunities, but were not able to beat Alyssa Nair and the Red Stars, and the Red Stars come out of there with a Kristen Press goal and win 1-0. What were your thoughts on that match?
I wasn't disappointed. I thought that the Pride gave a good account for themselves, but what we saw in that game was having the U.S. women spread out across this league really starts to make it an equal league, because they know how each other plays. They know what they need to be able to do to take an Alex Morgan out of the game. And that's what Chicago did. And we didn't do that for Press. And her goal was a fantabulous. I thought it was a pretty good goal, and they were really solid for the win. And I'm hoping that the Pride can bounce back, coming back home.
Yeah, it looked like a mix-up on that play. I mean, I don't think that Steph Catley was supposed to be taking her from her left back position. I don't think she was supposed to be that far into the midfield marking Press. I think that was a mix-up with the central defenders, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it certainly was. They got all at sixes and sevens, and up until that point, I've forgotten her name, the other Australian, Alloway.
Laura
she
Alloway,
had been having
yeah.
a pretty good game. And then somehow they just completely got out of shape, and Press was able to make them pay. And I would also potentially, I'm going to blame Ashlyn Harris a little bit. I thought her positioning could have been a little bit better when Press broke away, and she didn't close her down fast enough. But, you know, that's really kind of picking at a scab.
Yeah, because I think you're absolutely right about the picking at the scab, because another big game for Ashlyn Harris, another save of the week, opportunity for her. And I was just going to ask you about Ashlyn Harris. In fact, we're only three games in, but it's a short NWSL season. Ashlyn Harris is kind of off to a player of the year type league MVP type season.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think it makes it even more baffling that she cannot buy a U.S. women's national team start. I understand that Hope Solo is a great goalkeeper, but she doesn't need to play every game. She didn't need to play all of the games of the Victory Tour. Like, there were times where Harris could have played a game against, the second time they played a Brazil, or the Colombia games, where they were just beating teams 6 or 7-0. I think it kind of leads to the fact that we got a really great goalkeeper, and she played well for the Spirit last year, but she's really become a bedrock for this team right from the get-go.
Yeah, she is. I think Jill Ellis is just afraid of Hope Solo, so I don't think she's you're going to start, Hope. Oh, yep, you're going to play all 90 minutes. I'm not taking you out.
Well, there can't be any other explanation, right? I mean, after 3 weeks, three Save of the Week candidates, and they, you know, it's kind of hard. There's only 10 teams, so you are almost guaranteed when there's eight people up, but she's looking like she's going to win again this week. So that's a great performance. That's a sign of a quality goalkeeper, and you would love to see her get some more starts for the women's team.
Absolutely. It's still a growing process for Tom Cermani's team. They're still, you know, just a team that's been together for a matter of weeks. So, the offense is usually behind the defense in terms of, you know, new teams, and we certainly saw that with Orlando City last year. So we need to find a way to get better service to Alex Morgan and find a secondary scorer or a secondary threat that, will be able to pull some defenders away from her. And I think that they will do that. But a big, big, big match this weekend against the Seattle Reign, because the Reign is, they're a championship contender, and they've got back-to-back player of the week Kim Little coming in. So, they're not going to be a pushover, and you can't afford to get too far behind the eight ball, because it's a 10-team league. Top four make the playoffs. And if you get behind the eight ball early and you have too many teams to jump over, you just don't have the time to get those points back. So this is a very, very important early season match for the Orlando Pride. So go out Sunday and cheer them on. All right, so before we get to our guest, which is perfect thing, we're gonna talk a little bit about Orlando City B. They went once again went down to 10 men on the weekend, and somehow managed a 1-0 victory over FC Montreal. Andrew, how bad is Montreal?
I didn't think they were doing that badly this season, to be truly honest with you. But the fact of the matter is, they couldn't beat an OCB team that has really just been struggling so much this year. But you know, once again, maybe we've got to give some credit to the fact that we'd managed to grind out a win. Maybe we need our backs to the wall, which we haven't really had so far. You know, we kind of came in with this belief, well, you know, we did so great in USL. There's no way we can't do great again this time around. And we've come in and looked like absolute chumps in some games. So I think being, you know, down for, was it 70 minutes?
Yeah, I think Deveron Garcia was sent off in the 19th, I
Yeah,
believe.
70 minutes with our backs against the wall at home. That's only a performance that's going to really kind of hopefully bring this team on. But, you know, maybe Montreal are just, you know, they would be getting the wooden spoon at the end of the season.
Yeah, they are not off to a very good start at all. In fact, this was the battle for the basement, and OCB won by getting, you know, staying out of the basement and beating them. Michael Cox, the Canadian, with a goal in the 9th minute, and it stood up for the remainder of the game. Key talking point: Connor Donovan returns and plays 45 minutes for OCB.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see that the lads get another opportunity. He went down with a really bad, horrific ACL injury, and it's really good to see him getting some minutes and really highlighting why this franchise was brought in to be in Melbourne. Because last year he could have been getting some game time, but he needed to be in the 18 for the main for the major league squad. But now, being so close, he has the ability to do 45 minutes in a warm-up in a return game. He can start to build up that confidence that is so important as a center back, and you can just it was really good to see him out on the pitch.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget that he was ahead of Tommy Redding last year. He was, you know, first in line, you know, after the starters. And you're right, he couldn't get into the team, but he was always having to dress. And then they couldn't send him to Louisville to play because they needed him on the bench. And then, you know, what do you do? Stick him on a red eye and try to get him in the next night? That's not good for anybody. So, you know, having the team over in Melbourne is a big help for this type of situation. Just as you hit the nail on the head, and it's good to see Connor Donovan return from. You never want to see a kid get hurt like that. And it was a bad injury. It was just just minutes into his first MLS start, and he was playing well. He was off to a good start. And he, you know, he had a got tangled up with Philadelphia Union CJ Sapong on a ball forward that he was trying to get to, and they tangled up, and he came out the worse of the two for that. And you know, he went down, and then Tommy Redding got his opportunity. And you know, Redding's done a very good job this year. He's gotten to start. He's earned his way in. He's earned his way to stay on the field. He did have a couple of hiccups. Maybe some teams exposed him, especially New York Red Bulls exposed him a bit. And you know, that got David Mateos back into the rotation and the starting lineup. And but a lot of people forget, Redding was behind Connor Donovan, and this coaching staff is very high on Connor Donovan. They were very happy to draft him, and he was everything they'd hoped he'd be, you know, out of college in that draft. So, you know, it was good to see him get back out there and be part of that win. And you know, maybe he was a calming force when that team went down to 10 men, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but that comes from having those, you know, those big game experiences. Yeah, he didn't have many, but he was still dressing in the 18 for a lot of major league games before he got hurt. But I still remember, you know, when he got hurt and the scream that he made, like you knew it was a bad injury. So the fact that he's been able to come back, and we also OCB gets the win, you know, two big momentous occasions, hopefully going to turn around the season for OCB.
First home win at Titan Soccer Complex for OCB. And you know what? We're gonna have a quick little you know, announcement from a sponsor. But on the other side of this, why don't we talk to Connor Donovan and get his perspective? Joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very pleased to welcome Orlando City defender Connor Donovan to the show. Connor, how's it going tonight?
It's good. Just hanging out of the apartment, but yeah, everything's good.
That's good to hear. You know, obviously, you know, last year coming in as a rookie, your first year of MLS play, and you know, biding your time, getting to play in some friendlies and maybe a little bit of U.S. Open Cup, and then you know you get your chance to start, and didn't last a whole long time before you and CJ Sapong got tangled up on the Citrus Bowl turf, and you know you were injured and out for the year, and you're just coming back now from it. I guess my first question for you is did you know right away how badly you were hurt? You know, what was that like to go through?
Yeah, I mean, when it first happened, I knew it wasn't something good. I didn't, like, you know how everyone says when they tear their ACL, they hear a pop. I didn't hear that. I don't know if it's because the stadium was loud or I just couldn't hear it or anything, but it just, something didn't feel good and it hurt a lot. I handle pain pretty well, like I say. But it didn't feel good. And then, my mind, like right when I heard, the stretchers coming, I just like instantly said, oh, I'm fine. And popped up, and decided to try running. And then, it was like a little limp in the run, but, and then I figured I couldn't stop running. Like, when you tear your ACL, it wouldn't let me actually stop running. So that's kind of when it hit me that something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you weren't the first person who got injured on the Citrus Bowl turf last year. You kind of went through this with Kevin Molino. Was it kind of good to have somebody there that, you know, was able to help you through it and be going through the same thing at the exact same time?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to just have someone that you can talk to. I mean, I had also guys like Tony Cascio and Tally Hall were also there that did it the year before, and Tally was partially finishing his up probably around this time. Actually, maybe a month, like another month or so, he was getting back into it from his ACL tear. So having him and Tony and Kev, and Kev for most of them, just seeing the stuff he did and stuff I could look forward to and everything like that. So it's definitely helpful. There's no way it would hurt ever.
Connor, the club recently traded Aurelien Collin to New York Red Bulls, and I guess this has to be seen, by you as sort of an opportunity, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it makes one less center back on the depth chart, obviously. Aurelien was a great player and even a better person, so it's sad to see him go. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good opportunity for me right now. I'm not too worried about anything. I'm just trying to get back into shape and back into game fitness and game experience right now.
Well, and obviously OCB is kind of new this year. We didn't have much of a depth chart last year, so you did spend a little bit of time on the bench. How excited are you to be able to get that opportunity with OCB and not necessarily have to go straight into MLS action to be able to get those minutes?
No, it's awesome, especially right now having to go through like a protocol of 45, 60, and then depending how I feel, 60 going to 90 or whatever. So that's definitely really good because, I mean, you're not going to throw a 20-year-old out in an MLS game and let him play 45 minutes. And I mean, the USL is a high level. They're a really good game most of the time, high intensity. I mean, and it's better to be playing meaningful games than just kick around games. You know, these games are for points, they're for playoffs. So it's awesome, and it's a good group of guys. So it's a good learning experience.
So they say that when people come back from ACL injuries, that it takes anywhere from a year to 2 years to really get 100% right again. Where do you feel like you are right now?
I feel really good. Obviously, there are days where the knee swells up or something, or you feel weak one day, and then the next day you feel great, or you have a day off and you feel great. It just depends, and it's just a process for everyone I've talked to. They say it's every day it gets better, every day it gets stronger, which I can definitely tell. Just doing the practices every day and then getting more intense every day. And obviously playing in a game helps that process a lot. But, yeah, from what I've heard, it just continues to get better. And from what I can say, I feel really well. I feel really good right now, excuse me. I feel really good right now, and it's only going to get better.
Well, and obviously one story that's come out of this year is being the starting of Tommy Redding for the back line. You've been seeing him in training every day. How good do you think he can get, and is he your main competition for the future?
Tommy's a great player. I've known Tommy for a long time. We actually were center back partners with the U-17s, and a little bit with the U18s. So we played together for a long time, and we have good off the field vibe and a good relationship off the field and on the field. He's a very talented player, and I think he can continue to get better. I think all of us can. We have a young, really good young core group, which should make Orlando City fans really excited for the future. Yeah, I mean, everyone on the depth chart's competition, but we're teammates, so it's about pushing each other, whether that means I'm pushing Tommy to get better or even pushing Seven David to get better. It's just a friendly competition, but at the same time, we're trying to help each other get better.
Now, Connor, you just mentioned the U.S. youth national team that you and Tommy had played for. Obviously, while you were out, that's got to be a concern for you in terms of getting back and getting with the national team picture. Have you had conversations with the national team coaches during your time out?
No. Really, my last national team was with the U20s. Obviously, going to the World Cup, I was an alternate, and then I don't want to say lucky, but someone got hurt right before the tournament, and I was down there with them, so I ended up making the roster. But, yeah, that was my last real conversation with the national team. I think now at this point, it's more based on – I don't want to say – it's not based on reputation as much now, where when we were in the U20s and the U17s, that you could kind of just go into camp, and then most of us weren't playing first team minutes anyway, so they were just called – basically, it was hard to evaluate us outside of camp. Now it's to get into the first team, the full team, and at the time, U23, they'll be – I think my cycle passes after this. We'll just be to get back into that picture. We'll just be having to play first few minutes and obviously be successful the first few minutes.
Well, and obviously, you're getting some time with OCB. How has been the coaching down there? You've got two new coaches, but you are spending time with both teams. How is that for you? Are you learning mostly Heath style, or is Heath and Pulis really trying to engender the same tactic and formation?
They're basically doing the same thing. I mean, everywhere you go, the tactics are always going to be a little different, whether it's by personnel or the injuries and everything, or the type of team you're playing. But we definitely all have the same playing style. We like to keep the ball. We're going to go at you, but we're going to keep the ball at the same time and be calm on it. And Ant and Rob are doing a great job. Me and Ant had a pretty good relationship last year when he was helping out with the first team. Doing extra stuff after practice with him, so he's definitely doing a good job. And it's hard. I mean, he's coaching a new team, but he's definitely doing a really good job with it. And Rob's a great example for me, being a center back and being successful in his career. So they're two really good guys to learn from.
Now, how did your body react to your first competitive game in quite some time?
Yeah, my knee actually was really good. It didn't hurt at all during the game. I honestly didn't think about it. My body felt pretty good. 45 minutes, it doesn't seem like too long. I'm not going to lie, I didn't get too tired. I still have a little bit more to go on the fitness aspect. But honestly, it felt really good, and I have no complaints. Came out pretty unscratched, and my body feels good.
Well, and how do you, obviously this is going to be a little bit of a weird question, but are you comfortable with going back out on turf, or are you happy to see that Orlando is transitioning to grass for the stadium next year?
Well, I mean, obviously, if I break into the first team this year, I'll be on turf if we're at home. So, I mean, I'm excited no matter what, if that means playing in MLS. But you ask any soccer player that question, and they're going to say, yes, we're very excited to play on grass next year. that's just a common answer. But, yeah, I mean, if it comes to the point where I have to play on turf this year, I think getting a practice under my belt on turf and just familiarizing myself with it and every turf is different. You know what you're going to get with grass most of the time. So every turf's different though. So, I mean, I'll be excited. I'm just excited to play again, to be honest with you. Whether that's turf or grass.
Connor, a lot of our fans haven't really gotten a chance to see Orlando City B play a lot this year. What can you tell them about the defenders that you've worked with? Who are some of the guys that, would surprise people as being really high-quality players?
Yeah, it's a good group, honestly. I mean, I also like the first team. We have a lot of young guys that are really good. Obviously, everyone knows Tyler, Harrison, Lewis, and Richie LeRae, and all the guys. And Haji Berry from the MLS team. But you got Mikey Ambrose, who's a very good left back. Just really speed, really quick, good on the ball, good defender. Kyle McFadden's very strong defender, tackles hard, plays simple, good defender. You got Tony Rocha in the midfield, I think, so a really good player, just really silky on the ball. And then got you know, everyone knows Brian Roach is up top, and then you got Coxie, Michael Cox, who very strong, athletic player that can do damage in this league and score some goals. I think he's, I don't know, it was his second goal of the year for the USL last weekend. But if we get him going, I think he'll be a really good player.
Well, and who would you say that we want to start watching out for the first team? Obviously, we're starting to see some injuries go out and see some other people come in. Rives got his first goal last week. Do you see him going to be able to go on and score more goals?
Yeah, I think a big thing is confidence. You see Kev, he scored, and now he scored again. So I think confidence is a huge thing. So hopefully that propels Rives to score goals, which he's definitely capable of doing. He's a really exciting player and dangerous, very hard to defend against once he gets up to speed and everything. I think Julio is going to be great for us. He's a class player. I mean, you see it in training when he turns it on and he gets like a yard of space, he can put the ball anywhere he wants in the goal. Kyle, obviously, he's a goal scoring machine. Hopefully he can continue to do that and just pick his spots, find the good place that he is and just continue to be a goal scorer.
Well, Connor, before we let you go, I just wanted to, you know, just kind of wrap this up by asking, you know, what kind of conversations have you had with Adrian Heath during your recovery, and when do you think, you know, or are you setting a personal goal as to when you might get back to the senior club, or have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, Adrian's been really good, good through the whole process. Came to me a couple of days after I did when I was in the training room and talked to me for a while, just saying people come back stronger and everything. He actually did hit me when he was a player too, so he was able to talk to me about that and then just asking me, I mean, it's simple things, just asking me how I'm doing, like when I was on crutches, like 4 months out, all that stuff, like different times he was just checking up on me. And now he's been really good, just pushing me in training and making sure I'm doing everything clean to just get back to be sharper and obviously to continue to get better. I haven't set a goal, which is, I'm usually a goal setting kind of guy, but for me right now it's just kind of what last year was like, knowing that I have to work really hard behind the scenes and when no one's watching and in training and everything, and just continue to get better. And because eventually opportunities happen. That happened to me last year, and it just so happened that it wasn't meant to be at the time. So just continue to work hard and hope for the best. But I'm really looking forward to playing games this year. I said earlier that I played only 5 games last year, and I think 2 of them were friendlies, and one was alone to Pittsburgh. So I'm just really excited to play a ton of games this year and win some games.
Well, Connor Donovan, we certainly wish you the best of luck in your road to back to the MLS, and you know you're going to get the night off tonight to watch Orlando City B play Cincinnati if the weather allows it to happen.
And,
but you know, good luck with you know, playing in the USL, and you know, hopefully we'll be back in the MLS soon.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, big thanks to Connor Donovan for being on the Mainland Podcast. We know he wasn't scheduled to suit up for OCB tonight, but then again, maybe it wouldn't have mattered because they are still, as we're recording this, in a holding pattern, now an hour and a half delayed, and who knows how much longer they will be delayed. Our own Sean Rollins, who covers OCB for us because he lives over there by Melbourne, says that the team is eating dinner, and so it won't be anytime soon. But you know, thanks to Connor for being with us and you know, telling us about his experiences with the injury and with coming back and all of that. So we wish him the best of luck and really happy that he was able to come on to the program with us. Andrew, before we get out of here, it's just about the end of the podcast, but this is we're going to get New York Red Bulls again. these things just keep coming, just like New York, New England, New York, New England. The Red Bulls we get again at the Orlando, well, the artist formerly known as the Orlando Citrus Bowl, now known as Camping World Stadium. And I just shudder to think of what that Red Bulls midfield did to Orlando City 2 weeks ago. What is your key matchup for Friday night, and how do you see this one turning out?
I think you hit it right on the nail on the head. We're seeing a resurgent Red Bulls team, but it has to be that battle of the midfield. We've been losing it for the last 3-4 games. The Philadelphia game, you know, we didn't look strong in the midfield. Both New England games, they kind of played us out. The Red Bulls game, they just absolutely destroyed our midfield. So it's got to be about containing the resurgent question, keeping Grella and Sam just not being able to get that service up to Wright Phillips, who's just all of a sudden found his scoring boots too. If we don't have a way to get the partnership back of Higuita and Saren, I see this being a little bit of a bloodbath, even though we're back at home. And I'm actually going to go with a 2-0 loss. I think we don't do well on Friday night games. The crowd is usually a little bit smaller. I think Red Bulls get a third win in a row.
That's depressing. The midfield is absolutely cooking on all cylinders for the Red Bulls. Kleshchen and Grella have been fantastic the last two games. They destroyed Portland. I mean, they made Portland look worse than they made Orlando City look in that match the other night. Just Portland was overmatched, completely swamped in the midfield. Dax McCarty is playing. He played a great game against Portland. He played very well against Orlando City, but I thought he really, really made a difference against Portland. Felipe played great. Sam is a dangerous player. In fact, I thought that Breck Shea was way too eager to give him space when we played them. I thought he was a little bit intimidated by Sam's movement, and I think that caused problems because Sam was able to get some crosses into the box that were dangerous. And you know, to New York's credit, they were able to beat Orlando City in the air and head some of those back across goals and create some really, really dangerous situations and cause problems for Joe Bendick. So, that is probably Bendick's weakness, is when the ball is kind of served, over him, and he's got to make that decision. Do I come? Do I stay? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the weakness in his game seems to lie. So, it's kind of depressing. The more I think about this, the more I think that Orlando City may extend that winless streak to 5 games. I'm going to say that the key matchup for me, though, I'm going to go the other way and say, look, this team's been pretty good at holding teams to 2 goals this year or less. So I think that for me, the key is Orlando City's attack against the back line of New York. And they have to put pressure on New York's back line, because New York's not had a great back line this year. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they went out and traded and got Aurelien Collin because they have struggled in the back line. But Orlando City was not able to really mount much of an attack, but was still able to score 2 goals at Red Bull Arena. And so I think that for me, the key is, can the return of Kaká and can Kyle Larin and Molino and, Batista or Winter or whoever else is up front, can they challenge that back line and get them out of sorts and put goals in the net? Because as Adrian Heath is fond of saying, goals change games. And if Orlando City can get on the front foot and get a goal early and then get another one, they can really take the Red Bulls out of what they like to do. They had a lot of problems with that high pressure. And I think Orlando City has to give some of that back in this matchup and come up with their own high pressure and make things difficult. Make it tough for the Red Bulls to get the ball out of the back and into the midfield.
Yep.
That's my key. I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic and say it's a 2-2 draw.
Okay.
I think that Kyle Larin's due for a goal.
He is due after starting. I mean, his goal per game has got to be way down now.
Yeah, it's definitely below where it was after 3 games.
I think it is all about just getting the service. But I think we talked about it in the first half of the podcast, the service is not necessarily there. We need that Rivas. We need somebody on the left side to kind of bring in the potency that Winter is also being able to bring in. And without that, we're always just going down the same flank, and it's not necessarily working. So, yeah, if we can put pressure on it, like you say, Red Bulls have got a weak defense. There's a reason they went out and paid half of Aurelien Collins' salary when we felt, you know, he wasn't even worth starting. But time will tell whether or not Friday comes too soon for a Orlando City side that's struggling.
Does Aurelien Collins take a penalty on Friday night? Does he commit a foul in the box against his whole team?
I personally don't think he starts. I don't think Marsh is ready to go there yet. And we also, he doesn't have that match fitness. I think you'd be kind of doing a discredit to the fact that Zoumar and Wemet have been not having a bad couple of games. Because the midfield is not protecting them so well.
Yeah, it's really hard to have a bad game when Dax and Felipe are hoovering up every ball that comes into your half of the field. but we'll see. I mean, it's interesting. I think this is for a game 9 of the season. This is not far from really being a must win, in my opinion. I think Orlando City needs to get something from this match, and they cannot afford to continue to let this winless streak linger and fester and become a problem and you know, create confidence problems in the club. I mean, if they're going to get Kaká back, that's going to boost some confidence, but they have to go out and they have to perform. And it's been a while since the back line has played the way it did the first, you know, few games of the season. And they need to have a strong game in the back. And I think that, you know, if Bendik plays like he's been playing and the defense can step up, they should be able to. I mean, we've seen they can play with anyone in the league. So, you know, we just hope that they can execute, put together a good game plan. And, you know, I mean, because last year they destroyed the Red Bulls in New Jersey. And they really, even though they were down a man, were the better side for most of the game. You know, the one at the Citrus Bowl. So, you know, they have had good games before against the Red Bulls. So they are capable, and I hopefully that they'll get out there on Friday night and get after them.
I hope so too.
Go ahead.
I hope so too, but because I think you're right. We know how to play him, and you see that in that frustration that Jesse Marsh showed in the first half of the game. You know, he's upset with certain calls. He's upset with the way the game is going in his favor. We know how to play that team, and that's why I think the loss that we saw up in New Jersey was just kind of so, you know, it was one of those things which you couldn't really expect, because we thought that was one of those teams that we could just go out and kind of dominate even if we weren't playing well.
Yeah, but that didn't happen. No. So we get another shot at them, and you know, the good thing is I think you know, if you can get a win against them, then it's going to boost your confidence, because they are the reigning Supporters Shield winners, and there's a lot of talent on that team, and they've been playing very, very well. So hopefully the lads in purple can go out and get a result and get 3 points on Friday night. That's going to about do it for episode 48 of this podcast, Andrew. I know that we would like for our friends out there to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at The Mainland. You can read our blog at themainland.com. And, you know, why don't you just leave us a really nice feedback at iTunes? That'd be really helpful as well. We're going to do this new thing pretty soon. We've got our Facebook page has been verified. We're going to start doing some live video stuff on there with Facebook Live. So we're kind of spitballing and game planning how we're going to do that. So stay tuned for some announcements on that. And, well, that's about it. That takes care of all the business we have. We'll be back next week to break down this Orlando City and New York Red Bulls game. Maybe we'll be talking about Orlando City B against Cincinnati, but who knows? It doesn't look like that game's starting anytime soon. You know, we'll have some thoughts on the Pride and the Rain, and we'll look ahead to even more matches the following week. Because, man, this just doesn't end until, like, October. This is good stuff. So
yeah.
So Andrew, we're going to call it a night, and we'll be back next week. And so on behalf of Andrew Harrison and the absent Daniel McGann this week, this is Michael Citro signing off by saying, go City!